designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today's show is going to be about some security topics that equally affect businesses and home users. So we're going to talk about a router security website that I think you should definitely take a look at, how it's easy to steal Windows credentials and what you can do to prevent it. And then we're going to go into the 2016 Mid-Year Security Roundup, and it's an overview of the past 6 months of security issues, which ones were big, how to deal with the risks and what the threats are. And even if you're just simply trying to keep your home computer working, this is the type of stuff that you need to know. All right, so let's get started. First, I'm going to post a link to a router security website that you should definitely visit. This router security website, it's actually routersecurity.org. It has a bugs page, and that bugs page, it goes through all kinds of fun little security issues associated with a wide variety of routers out there. And in the very first sentence of that page, it actually says, it's best to avoid consumer-grade routers on the whole. And I find that whole thing pretty entertaining because this is something I've been saying for probably the last decade. And it's nice to see some sort of continuity amongst the security landscape of the people publishing and these sorts of technologies. Now, another really important thing that I found interesting on this particular router security page where they were talking about bugs was the Internet of Things issues. Now, this was actually a posting that they made earlier this month, which was actually before a massive Internet of Things denial of service attack that hit Krebs on Security and a variety of other large security websites. And the whole deal with Internet of Things is you have all these appliances, whether they're little webcams or your refrigerator or whatever it happens to be, but it's a variety of these Internet of Things type appliances that are connected to the internet, and they're typically connected using what's called UPnP, which is Universal Plug and Play. And Universal Plug and Play is absolutely horrible. It is something that is a technology that business class routers and firewalls don't even have. I mean, you can't even enable UPnP inside of a WatchGuard firebox because it's known to be, astronomically insecure. So UPnP for your consumer-grade router effectively allows a device like an insecure webcam to just open up whatever ports it thinks it needs to the internet. And this isn't like egress ports, these are ingress ports. So this is literally creating an ability for an external initiated session to tunnel into this device on your network. Well, now, if this device on your network is actually on the same subnet where it can connect to your laptop, your television, a variety of things like that, well, then you can imagine that a vulnerability in the webcam that would be exploited would also then result in utilizing that webcam or your printer to literally attack and hack and sniff the traffic that is originating from your computers that you do your online banking with. So this particular article was rather interesting because it says hackers found 47 new vulnerabilities in 23 different Internet of Things devices at the recent DEF CON conference. And of course, there's actually a simple solution to these problems. And the solution is you actually have to use a commercial grade unified threat management appliance, a security appliance, which is what I've been advocating for the last decade. But it does have to be correctly programmed. You can't just put everything all on the same subnet. So this is not the type of thing that you're just going to be able to do with, your home user knowledge. Your relative who, quote, works in IT, is not going to be able to handle it. The IT guy at the school or whatever is probably not going to have the skills to be able to do it. You actually need to be able to work with somebody who is certified as a security architect and as a security expert. Otherwise, you really don't have any faith, or you shouldn't have any faith that the device itself is the correct device or that it's configured properly. I actually do a lot of security audits for organizations, and so if anybody wants a security audit just to find out whether or not their existing service provider has things correctly configured to mitigate even basic threats, let alone more advanced threats, do contact me and let me know if you're interested in such services. They're not very expensive, actually. So I'm going to publish this link to this router security webpage because I think it's just it's a great resource. And if you actually have a consumer grade router, then I would really strongly suggest you replace that as soon as possible. One of the other things they talked about was Ruckus having major problems, and that wireless access points made by Ruckus have major security flaws. Now, some years ago, I looked into Ruckus and I decided that it was not a technology that I wanted to align myself with because I did not think it was secure. And unfortunately, it's been proven again just in August of this year that they're not taking care of security flaws in their products. So that's a shame. All right, let's move on to stealing Windows credentials. So, we all think that you just lock your computer screen when you're away from your computer, and that nobody can then come up to your computer and do things to it without your knowledge. And I would say mostly that's true, especially if you have certain technologies implemented on your computer that are going to prevent automatic execution of USB things, USB related things. However, we've talked about bad USB quite extensively. We've talked about the fact that the USB standard as a driver technology standard for all computers, not just Windows computers, was designed to be highly compatible and highly open. As a result, a device, when it gets plugged in via USB connection into your computer, it actually tells the computer what kind of a device it actually is. It says, I'm a keyboard, I'm a mouse, I'm a USB flash drive, I'm a physical hard drive, so removable media versus non-removable media. It tells. So, what this also means then is that a maliciously programmed USB flash drive or a maliciously programmed USB device in general can be programmed to present itself as something other than what it is when it's plugged into your computer. And then because of that, it can actually now get loaded and attached to the operating system and start executing some back-end functions. Well, turns out a security researcher has done extensive, and I do mean extensive, testing to find out literally how easy it is to steal Windows credentials even with the lock screen enabled. Now, this is a horrible, horrible problem. I mean, this is really some scary stuff because if you imagine that, you go to all of these links in order to prevent people to gain access to your data. You're encrypting your hard drives, you're using complex passwords, you're setting a lock screen timeout when you are away from your computer, you're locking the screen. Well, now it's been absolutely irrefutably proven that if someone is able to gain physical access to your computer while it's locked, they can insert a USB device, which will be able to successfully steal your Windows credentials. And the reason is because of certain flaws, and also because as long as the computer is booted up and you are logged in with it locked, your profile session has cached credentials in that profile session. And apparently this hack is able to steal those cached credentials. Now, you wouldn't necessarily know that somebody has just walked up to your computer and plugged in this device to steal your credentials. So when you come back, you don't know that anything's actually even happened. So how would you then know, oh, well, I better go change my password? You wouldn't. So there are two mitigating factors. Well, actually, I would say three mitigating factors for this. Number one, you really need to be using multi-factor authentication, even on your local Active Directory. Your, you know, when I say local, I'm talking about your on-premise Active Directory. Secondly, you need to be using very sophisticated logon event analytics, which pretty much I would have to say the only way you're going to get that sort of technology is if you subscribe to the E5 plan in Office 365 and then spend several thousand dollars in consulting labor getting that all set up. So it's certainly within the reach of the majority of organizations, nonprofit or otherwise, but that's probably a level of sophistication and technology capabilities that your average home user is obviously not going to have access to. So multi-factor authentication, even for a Windows logon, is necessary. Because if that means if they've stolen your credentials, what they don't have, though, is they don't have that second factor of authentication. So that means that, you know, then they can't go and maliciously utilize the stolen credentials to go do other things on the network with your credentials. Now, if those credentials are the same credentials that you use to get into Office 365 and you don't have Office 365 multi-factor authentication enabled, well, then you just shot yourself in the foot. Because probably at that point you also don't have E5, so you have no ability to know that somebody's used your stolen credentials to access them from, you know, wherever and do whatever they possibly can with those stolen credentials. So, you know, it's all you really have to do is enable multi-factor authentication everywhere, and I've talked about this extensively, and this is just another fine example of how this gets driven home more so. It's just the same security themes keep coming up as viable mitigation techniques. However, one thing that's kind of a new revelation here is that unless your computer is in a physically hardened space, which I would say that virtually no one listening to this radio show is going to have a computer system that's in a physically hardened space. And no, I don't consider the interior of your home to be a physically hardened space. Maybe if you have like a safe room with a heavy duty locked door, you know, and a surveillance and an alarm system and all that, and the computer's inside that, okay, I count that as a hardened physical space. But if it simply means that somebody can break into your house and gain physical access to your computer, that's not a physically hardened space. So your mitigation, you know, risk mitigation technique in this circumstance is just shut down the computer. And I don't mean sleep mode. I mean, shut it down all the way when you're not using it. And certainly you're still going to have to allow your computers to stay on overnight, a couple nights, a month at least, if not four to eight nights per week, just so that they can patch and do updates and things like that. However, if you're in the home at the same time while the device is up and you know, doing its updates overnight, this really shouldn't be an issue. What's of a bigger concern is you've left. You went to the grocery store, you went to work, you went someplace, and your computer is still up. Now, if a criminal enters your home at that time and has one of these special USB devices, which, by the way, can be obtained for less than $200, so it's extremely accessible at this point. And then they just simply plug that into your computer. Well, you know, I mean, Katie bar the door at that point, they can get your credentials. And if they're a smart criminal, what they're going to do is first plug that device in and steal your credentials. And then they will plug in a second device, which is actually a downloader. and that downloader, so they take the credentials that they've just stolen from your computer, use that to log in, and then now that the screen's unlocked, then their secondary device literally just downloads your entire hard drive and all the goodies that are on it. Now, the reason that they don't really want to steal your computer and make a getaway with it is because then, well, you would know, wouldn't you? You know, you would know that your data was compromised, and then you'd go about the business of changing all your passwords and stuff. But the other reason that they don't really want to steal your computer and take it away, assuming that they're stealing it for the purposes of like data theft, okay, as opposed to just, oh, I'm going to take this computer and, you know, resell it on eBay for, you know, some money. You know, if they're trying to sell stolen hardware, that's one thing. But if they're really going after your data, then they're going to steal your credentials, unlock the screen, plug in this downloader device, and grab all the contents, and they don't really want to shut down the computer, because if they do and you have encryption enabled on the entire hard drive, then they won't be able to decrypt it. So they need to keep it up and running. So I go back to this whole thing of, if you're not home, just shut it down. That's all you got to do. Just shut it down. I mean, you still have to have an encrypted hard drive, but setting up an encrypted hard drive on Windows 10 is basically child's play, because you just have to make some group policy modifications and then configure at least a 10-digit decryption password. Your computer has to have a TPM module, which a lot of computers are coming with TPM modules today, and you would know if you have a TPM or not by going into the BIOS and looking at it. So, BitLocker, it's a good thing. Use it. Shut down the computer when you're not using it, and you can mitigate that risk. Okay, so let's talk about the 2016 mid-year security roundup as the remainder of the show. Turns out that the biggest issue is ransomware, and I'm sure that is not going to be a surprise to any of you, but it's really quite astronomical that it has exploded. I mean, if you look at like last year's number of ransomware families, we're talking about 172% increase in volume in just 1 year. And so that now means that ransomware is the largest threat that you have to protect your systems against. Now, the reason that this is extremely significant is because the majority of individuals do not have adequate protections against ransomware. I would argue that the majority of businesses don't have adequate protections against ransomware. And I think we can see that this is true because there have been a bunch of ransomware-related massive data breaches that have occurred recently, including, you know, hospitals. So in order to mitigate against ransomware, you really have to have a very sophisticated layered defense technique going on. And I'm just going to be blunt. This is not something that is within the range, within the realm of just buying a product and installing it. And hey, I've got protection. You can't do that. You can't just go buy some security product and install it with the default settings and then say, oh, I'm protected, because the attacks are coming through email. I actually saw recently, last week, I was working with somebody who had Yahoo email, and that is the same as anybody who has SBC Global. You know, SBC has actually been using anybody with sbcglobal.net, that's really hosted on Yahoo's stuff, and we all know that Yahoo has encountered massive breaches recently. Well, they also have not been prioritizing security, and they really have very poor filtration technology for anything that is spear phishing related. And I've seen some of these. And it literally, if you're a Yahoo email user, they do not have adequate email security protections in order to prevent this spear phishing emails coming through that are going to present you links to click on, which will absolutely guaranteed install ransomware on your machine. So buying a security product is probably not going to mitigate that risk. What you have to do is actually be utilizing email services that scan that email for ransomware-related things, and really it's a whole category called advanced persistent threats, scan it there, either before it gets to the server or while it's on the email server, but before you see it, so that you don't even have the option to click on it. And really, the only system that is out there at this point in time that can do all of that is a deep approach that is comprised of using professionally hosted email services and something like Trend Micro's Cloud App Security as in combination with hosted email security. So you're talking about using multiple layers of defense there. And now that's just the email side. Okay, that's just the email side. Then you have to talk about endpoint security and perimeter security and all that. And I'm not going to rehash that all here because I've talked about that a bunch of times, and I've got published articles on qualityplusconsulting.com website that will tell you all about that. It is formulaic, but it's an art form that the vast majority of humans don't know how to do. So it's really prudent to try and associate yourself with a security architect that is offering those services to put that system in place. It's actually much more affordable than you think. I mean, if you're an average business, you can get a whole solution for less than $5,000, including consulting labor. So, I mean, that's parts, software, subscriptions, the whole nine yards, plus consulting labor. And so it's actually quite affordable. So there's really just no reason to not do it if you're an organization. So beyond this whole topic of the astronomical explosion in variants, the exploit kits are very, very available. So these ransomware families are being delivered by exploit kits that literally you can buy on the darknet for $50, a couple $100, something like that. And what it comes down to is teenagers are actually buying these, obviously criminals are as well, but teenagers are buying these ransomware exploit kits and then, you know, customizing them for themselves. It's literally a wizard, and then it has a whole back-end system. So it's something that, again, has been turned into child's play. The real heavy-duty hackers who write these exploit kits, they're very interested in making money on the software that they develop. So they develop these exploit kits, and then they sell subscriptions. And a person who wants to utilize an exploit kit is going to effectively subscribe to the exploit kit that the master hacker... So it works just like a regular software company and a regular software subscription. It's just, it's all malicious garbage. The threat landscape was over 28 trillion new threats blocked just in the first half of 2016. Now we're talking about new threats. We're not talking about blocking things that were already known. So this correlates to the statistic that over 12,500 new viruses are generated every hour. At least those are the statistics that I continue to see. And so when we look at this combination of the volume of what's happening and the fact that the majority now of the threats that are occurring are all advanced persistent threat type, this means that an approach that is a signature-based approach is a completely dead and ineffectual paradigm as a solution. It doesn't mean that I want to get rid of signature-based detection. No, absolutely not. I'm saying that if your security approach is reliant primarily on a signature-based approach, then you're going to be missing probably 85% of the types of variants of things that are actually attempting to compromise your systems at this point. So you really have to have things like reputation services, advanced persistent threat blocking, intrusion detection, intrusion prevention services. You really have to have a sophisticated web proxying strategy. And I still don't see the majority of organizations doing HTTPS filtering correctly, because it's an extremely complicated art form to get it right. And what I find is that most people in leadership in companies do not have the stomach to simply hold the line and say to the end users, "Hey, I understand you're having some challenges. We will work through it. But the solution to your perceived concern is not that we should disable security." So, for example, a week or two ago, I received a communication from a new IT manager who had just recently rolled out a new host-based security product. And he's like, "Oh, the users are complaining that they can't get to stuff and blah, blah, blah." And he's like, "I want to, whitelist and unblock things." And I'm like, "Well, you really don't even have the information here to be able to make an assessment as to what the correct approach is. You need to go do some more information gathering, and then I can work with you to determine what the correct approach is." And 99% of the time, it's user re-education. Like, don't click on the advertisement links, people. Those are advertisements. We all know that most advertisements are infected. They're malvertisements, so you definitely don't want to click on it, and you certainly don't want to reconfigure your security solution to allow advertisements since most of them are maliciously infected. Okay. So the solution is never to turn off the security features that you need. This is exactly what Target did that caused their massive breach. They disabled standard security protocols. So, if you are going to protect your organization, whether you're the IT manager, the business owner, the business decision maker in general, you have to have the intestinal fortitude and the stomach to hold the line to say, "Look, I understand, the bookkeeper is having some challenges right now with the online banking website or with this website or that website, whatever. And we will work with that person to figure out a way for them to be able to do what they legitimately need to do." But the solution is never to turn off security features and to disable the necessary protections for the company that the company's actually paid for. So the business leaders have to support the IT process that is a process that says, "Okay, I understand it's a little inconvenient for you. I understand you're receiving some sort of a block message, or you feel like something's interfering with your ability to get your job done." So the solution is for you, the end user, to work with the IT department in order to find the solution that allows you to do your job while still retaining the security protections that the company needs. And so, really, what I see in the majority of cases where security is being messed up, it's because executive management and business leaders put the wrong kind of pressure on the IT people who, unfortunately, too much of the time are weak and they don't want to lose their jobs. When you've got a business owner who's blowing a gasket because they're overreacting, because their priorities are in the wrong place. The priority needs to be that you have to take control of the cost profile of a breach by not diminishing security. It's very easy to work with an end user to figure out what's going on and what needs to be done so that they can still do their job without defeating security. That's actually pretty easy, but it takes patience. And it takes understanding and a willingness to work together. So, blowing a gasket and popping off at the IT department and saying that, "Well, just unblock it, just I gotta have access to it." If you overreact like that and you don't support the IT department, then that IT person who is just fearful of losing their job is going to be opening up all kinds of holes into the security plan that you have in your infrastructure, and that really doesn't help the organization. So I'll publish a link to the ransomware report for you, as well as the mid-year security roundups that you can take an additional review of. All right, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website.